Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of, welcome to Monday Night Magic, because it's Monday and we're recording and talking about magic. Yeah, that sounds right. I think it's Monday Night Magic. Wait, is Squee here?
I'm here. You know what it's not, though? It's not Chewy-filled.
Wait, what? It's not?
I know.
Hold on. Chewy?
I think he got his head caught in the chair that is the lack of internet.
Oh, dear. We have no Chewy this week, but we have something that some would argue might even be better than Chewy.
Ha!
I said some.
Okay. Maybe one or two out there.
Joining us this week is none other than Robert Loggia himself from the Pit Imps podcast. We have Angelo.
Hello, everybody. I'm sad. No Chewy.
Yeah. We're all a little down in the dumps. Chewy fell off the internet. As far as I know, he's fine, I think. But Snowpocalypse 2015 is currently underway, and his internet just could not handle all of the ice, snow, and panic. If you actually go and read a weather statement, it says that travel is impossible.
Impossible?
Yeah, it actually says that.
Like everywhere?
No, just in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Which I should really tell all those people driving outside that.
Oh,
they don't
God,
seem to know.
They should not be driving at all. What are they doing? Sweet.
Traveling.
Jesus, that's terrible.
These storms always make me feel bad for the people on the West Coast, like in L.A. and San Diego and that, who turn on their nightly news and they have to watch how the East Coast is getting killed by storms that they never see. Makes me feel bad for them.
Yeah, whereas we never actually have to care that California is on fire and that the entire West Coast is shaking itself to death because they don't actually report on that.
In fact, here is the official, this is a special statement about the weather that was posted. It is impossible travel conditions later this evening through Tuesday morning due to ice covered roads.
So, well, you guys need to step up your game because we deal with that all the time and it's, you can drive on it. It's not impossible.
No.
Did you see last year? Yeah.
You can't drive on it. That's different.
I mean, there's an image making its rounds on the internet right now that is from last year's big snow and ice storm that hit North Carolina. And it's just like, as far as the eye can see, it's cars that have pulled off or slid off the road. And there's one in the distance that's on fire.
And yeah, that's down the street from my house. I could walk there.
I don't really know how that one caught fire, but it totally did.
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. The photo would not lie.
Well, anyway, we are without Chewy tonight, but that does not mean we are not going to go ahead anyway, because, well, it's Monday. Magical things happened. We need to talk about them. So, welcome to episode not quite 500 of Monday Night Magic. It is 450. I'll let you go look up what that number means, but that's cool.
Is that the hardest class of Mario Kart?
Yes, I think it might be.
I don't remember.
Well, welcome to episode Rainbow Road of Monday Night Magic, where we're going to talk about things and or stuff. So, this past weekend, we are back into the swing of things. You know, the Pro Tour is now behind us, so we can have actual regular tournaments again that the rest of us can lose at, rather than just the pros losing at it. And we had GP Seville happen. It was standard, and we had something around 800 players. I see 806 in the show notes, but I swear coverage said 799. So
yeah, that's what I heard, 799. So
I guess
I pulled the number by looking at the results and standings and the like. And it's possible they're padding that a little bit.
Yeah, it's possible. Was it the round one standings that you were looking at?
No, it was a little later. Hold on, I will pull it up again.
Very curious.
It was the round 15 standings.
So seven people joined at some point just for giggles.
Which goes to 806, yeah.
Yeah.
These don't look like fake names, but admittedly, I wouldn't know.
Right. Hey, do you think by chance, has a Christmas miracle occurred? Are the decks? No, they're not in order.
Why would I have checked that in advance? I love the surprise.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's always such a good feeling when you go to look at the top 8 deck lists and realize they're not in any kind of an order.
And why would they be? It's a Grand Prix.
Yeah, of course. Well, taking it down, in first place, we had Emmanuel Gershison. Yeah, there we go. He is from Austria, so congratulations to Emmanuel for taking it down. He was also apparently the champion at GP Madrid in 2014, or so these notes here tell me. So
yeah,
they would never lie.
he won GP Madrid. This was roughly within the last 6 months. And in that tournament, he played this really crazy aggro deck. So obviously, you know, you would think he's going to come back and play aggro again, right?
Right, of course.
Well, no.
What?
No.
Why would you not play aggro? I don't understand. You're not.
He wants to flex his magic muscle and prove that he can play control. He is a very, very controlling Ugin Pearl Lake Ancient black-blue, just ignorant stuff deck.
Interesting. So, yeah, let's take a quick glance at his winning deck list here. And it looks like, of all things, we have two copies of Ashiok in here.
Yeah.
As well as two copies of Ugin. So I assume those, coupled with the one Pearl Lake Ancient in the main deck, those are the real win conditions here?
Yeah, with the ability to pull in more Ashiok from the board.
Yeah, those are not the only real ones. They are the only ones.
And occasionally Tasker, but that's really not what you want to rely on.
Right, right.
In the games that I watched, Ashiok was pretty effective given the density of the two drops that are being run in all the Abzan decks.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to have an Ashiok and then pretty much from the get-go be able to grab something in the neighborhood of a 2-4 drop for your 3 mana is pretty ridiculous. They pretty much have to hit the Ashiok instead of you, which buys you time to, you know, get your Perilous Fault online or your Crux of Fate or whatever you need to do to buy yourself the real time to just win the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he beat? Looks like in the finals he was playing Pierre Soman. Is that right? Pierre Soman.
Obsidian aggro.
Is totally rocking the Obzon like everybody else rock the Obzon.
And so I watched the finals game, like the 3 games between the two of them. And when Pierre started out, it was, you know, very standard, you know, attack, attack, attack. The Thoughtseize in your aggro deck is pretty sweet because you can do a 2-drop and the Thoughtseize on turn 3.
Hmm.
Which can be nice. Also the ability to, because as you notice, like in here, we've got the 4 Fleece Main Lions and the 4 Death Dealers. So if you don't want to run out Nanafenza, like you're trying to play around counter spells that make you pay 1 extra or something, you can just run out a 2-drop and then Thoughtseize during the second, you know, the second action for the turn. And a turn 3 Thoughtseize is pretty devastating against a lot of decks because they've not really mobilized their main threat yet, but they've probably drawn it if they're going to draw it.
Yeah.
So that's very ideal there. And in the finals game, he actually, after he won the first game, he boarded out all the Sea Drynos because he was going up against a control deck and he just had to go for a better matchup. So he pulls in Elspeth and he pulls in Liliana so that if he has to go longer game, he has more to do. And unfortunately, even though he's got the 25 land here, he was on the really rough end of land in that last round.
Yeah.
Like in game 2, he looked at his first hand and it was a one lander that had 3 thought seizes. And you just sort
did the one land at least make black mana?
Oh, it did.
Yeah, that's a keeper.
Well, he didn't.
Oh, I would have kept that and just hoped for the best.
Yeah. Knowing that the list has 5 threats that can beat me and I have the opportunity to steal 3 of them, yeah, I'm keeping that.
He opted against it. He decided that he wanted to not be stuck in an awkward top deck war against a deck that draws so many cards, which I can understand, but on the same note, yeah, if you hit the win conditions, then life is great.
Yeah, realistically though, I mean, his sideboard plan I felt was completely wrong to begin with because like, you're obviously the quicker deck in this. So why do you want to slow your deck down to go play at somebody else's pace? It just doesn't make any sense. Like,
I don't care
what sport you're playing. Like if you're playing football and you're playing up tempo, why would you take off the brakes or, you know, regardless of the sport, like you don't want to play to your opponent's strength. You want to make your opponent play at your strength. And he just bit right into it, said, I'm going to take out the Sea Drynos and go slower. And it's just like, why?
I think the fear was that the Sea Drynos were very, very bad against the blue-black planeswalker that has the ability to get them essentially for free.
Mm.
And because, you know, pulling one of those off the top pumps Ashiok up to 5, which means Ashiok can then get a free Sea Dryno. And that's really, really hard for his own aggro deck to overcome. I don't know if it was the right choice or not. I will admit that they mentioned in the coverage that apparently when the last round started, he had about an hour to wrap things up before his flight became an issue. So that's pretty awkward in its own right.
So this actually brings up two. We're just going to digress for a second because Chewie's not here and can't stop me, and this is what I do on my show. So first question, you may not have noticed, but when Pierre decided to mulligan that hand with the one land and the three thought seizes, did he check the top two cards of his deck after he decided to mulligan just to see if it would have worked?
I don't think he did, but I wasn't entirely paying attention to it. Like, the coverage guys were all like, well, you've got to keep that, right? And they're like arguing with each other over whether or not it's a good play. And they were pretty distracting when they did it. So I didn't actually notice if he looked.
The coverage guys were distracting?
A little bit.
I'm shocked. So let me ask you guys, do you check? Do you look after you decide to mulligan?
I never check the bunny.
I never look.
Those are just bad feelings.
Yeah, you really shouldn't. Either you've made the, you need to make the decision and you need to commit to it, and looking at those is just going to make you second guess next time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so you don't want to get in the habit of going, well, the last time I checked, it turns out I should have kept it, and then make the bad decision in the future.
Yeah.
Because that's not how probability works. You work with the data that you have.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think he did. That said, he mulliganed, and I think he ended up with a land heavy hand that had an Elspeth in it instead. Mm-hmm. Like, his board did an Elspeth and he kept that one. And yeah, he had a hard time facing off against the control deck in game two because there were a few board wipes floating around between the Vault and the Ugin.
Yeah.
And he just got outpaced.
It turns out that Elspeth tokens are really bad against Ugin.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Yeah. I'm going to negative zero this.
And, but the thing is, he didn't even have to do that because he could just wipe them all out from the get-go, and then he could zap Elspeth with Ugin just outright, and it's pretty effective. It got him in a really awkward spot where even if he was generating tokens each turn, it gave so much room to the blue-black deck to, you know, like, address the tokens as needed, and then just outright kill Elspeth through any number of effects, and it put him in a really awkward spot. And so they go to game three because he lost that one. And he had probably the worst luck I've seen another player get when it comes to land, even though I'm pretty sure I've been in this situation a number of times. And we've all been there.
Oh, yeah.
So he has a three lander, which is totally viable. You got your three lands, you've got two planeswalkers, you've got two good aggressive creatures. It's like the ideal opener you could hope for in this round. And he does not draw land for like 10 or 11 turns or something ridiculous. And that's with the aid of a courser. He is not getting land.
That sounds horrible.
And he's obviously not dying because his opponent's a control deck that can just take its time. But the game ended with him on, with Pierre on five lands with an Elspeth in his hand and his opponent on 13 lands having resolved his second Ugin. He was able to cast Ugin and have five mana up to address whatever he wanted to.
So I'm going to stop you right there. And I think just about any game where you can say resolved his second Ugin, pretty sure we know who wins.
It did not go well. At one point he dealt with the first Ugin, which was impressive. Like, Ugin came down, Ugin wiped the board, and in turn he managed to take care of Ugin with a downfall, I think.
Yep.
And then he managed the Thoughtseize, and in his opponent's hand was the second Ugin. And the serpent. And he got rid of the serpent because the serpent was a more pressing threat at the mana that they were at. And it would be something that he would have a much harder time dealing with given how hard it is to really stop those things once they get moving. The Purrlake Ancient is what I'm talking about. And I think he made the right choice, but on the same note, knowing full well that your opponent has another Ugin makes it really hard to commit to the board. And I think he just got in this really awkward spot where he could never actually mobilize the cards. On top of the fact that he was so far behind on mana that every turn just pushed him further and further back.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty tough to watch.
But so yeah. Says you. Me being the control player, I loved it.
Oh, well, no, don't get me wrong. I've played my share of control decks. That's exactly what you want in a control deck. To reach that point where you've dumped 13 lands, you have a handful of relevant cards, and your opponent and you both know the game's over, but he's not going to concede because there's no time and it's the last round. Yeah, it feels like an amazing power trip on the jerk end of the spectrum. And that's where you're sitting at that point, because you've got 13 lands and a resolved Ugin.
The jerk end of the spectrum.
Let's not forget he's also at this point resolved his third dig through time.
Yeah. It's pretty sick.
You can't win at that point.
He's paying for Dig Through Time. Like, he doesn't have to do anything else. He just gets cards.
Wait. You can just pay for Dig Through Time?
No, not you. He could. He had 13 lands.
Look, the next thing you're going to tell me is that in Legacy, people can just pay for their Force of Will.
I don't think that's ever happened.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I might have seen that once.
I think there was a tutorial video on showing how Magic could be played, but I'm not sure it was based on a true story.
All right, so what else did we see in the top eight? So looks like in third place, I think it was another Abzan deck.
Yep, it's the colors.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who it was in third place.
Nicholas Marion.
Ah, there he is, yeah. Boy, if only these deck lists were in order, wouldn't that be easier?
Not that you're passive aggressive.
Yeah, certainly not.
But hey, look, it's Thorin and Elspeth, and they're doing stuff.
Look, it's the dazzling duo of Sorin. Have they ever actually met Sorin and Elspeth story-wise?
I don't think.
I don't believe they've been on the same plane at the same time before.
Huh. Well, we got a sitcom. All right.
Sorin, vampire, let's just go to the afterlife on principle, right?
So yeah, it looks like another Abzan deck, but a little more aggressive. We've got Brimaz
in here.
King. It's got King of the Kitties. That's awesome. And main deck Tassiger, who is, again, he is just bananas.
Look,
somebody had to say it.
No, they didn't.
It's me.
I don't know that this deck is more aggressive. I think you're reading into it too much. Like, the other deck had four kitties, little kitties, not Kitty King, and it had four Death Dealers. So those are two drops. And plus he's running four Anathenza, which, you know, is very good against the Stainful Stroke. That's worth pointing out. And then he had the four Siege Rhino as well. So, like, he didn't bother with things like Sylvan Caryatids. He was like, those are unneeded. That's chaff.
Now, the previous Abzan deck, was it running Whip?
No.
Because we
It was running Rock instead.
Yeah, we've got a single copy of Whip in the main here.
It makes the Tassiger purr. it's pretty great for that. And honestly, like, I think that this one is a little bit slower. If you look at the spell suite, it's definitely a little more reactionary. It has more outright, you know, like, kill that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's only got the two Thoughtseize. But again, you're not doing the turn one Thoughtseize thing unless you just want to know what's in their hand. But instead, what we've got going on here is, you know, as the game runs longer, you've got Tassiger's ability. Otherwise, you just have him as an aggressive guy you can delve out. Whip still being value whip is great. Having the main deck Elspeth means you're acknowledging that your deck is going to go to a later point in the game than you would in a real aggro deck.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. And in fourth place, we had, is that Carlos Ballester Garcia? Was he fourth?
Yeah, sure.
It is. Okay. And I keep reading his name as Battlestar Garcia, and I'm like, I want to watch that right now.
Now, he's running a deck that I think I could get behind. Looks like a green-red deck. Let's say green red devotion, I guess, because he's got Nykthoses.
Yeah,
green red Cylon.
It's running the green red Cylon. so here we've got the power duo of Xenagos and Nissa, who have not been on the same plane at the same time, to my knowledge.
I don't believe so. I don't think it's likely either.
Xenagos was only briefly, a god, and then died. No, let's see now. He traveled around as a planeswalker before he went back to become a god.
So it's possible, but we don't know for sure.
Maybe next time they need dual decks, right?
But we do have Stormy in here, as well as Hornet Queen. So Jack would be proud. Be sure to tell everyone be sure to tell Jack how much you love Hornet Queen. And Pelucranos, because hey, why not?
I mean, you're making the green.
Yeah, may as well.
Whisperwood Elemental.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Whisperwood Elemental. Yeah.
I didn't want you to shy over that. I wasn't sure if he was going to.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's kind of good.
Look at the cards you're manifesting in this deck.
Right.
Seems awesome.
You have a chance of missing for 30, so half your deck you're going to miss on. But realistically, I mean, those are lands and bolts. And I don't know that hitting a land with your manifest is exactly missing. But when you do get to flip a Pelucranos, isn't that nice?
Well, it's got the fun interaction of when Corsair is out and you Whisperwood.
Uh-huh.
You're like, hey, look at that. The mystery is gone. Enjoy.
Yeah.
You know exactly what this is that's going to punch you in the face.
At any rate, very good use of the Nykthos to just dump all of this massive stuff out.
I like that deck a lot. Fifth place, we had Martin Yuza, who is a name that should be familiar to folks. And it looks like he's running some sort of a Sultai aggro deck. Jeskai, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Jeskai in that it has Dig Through Time. Is there other blue over here?
Yeah, that's the blue. It's...
Yeah, okay, it's...
It's Treasure Cruise, Dig Through Time, and everything else is your red-white aggro deck.
It's got Mantis Rider, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess it does. I mean, there's a little bit of blue there. But realistically, we all know that that's a red-white card. They just put blue on for, you know...
To balance it?
Yeah.
To slow it down?
Yes.
Sure. I think of it more just for flavor reasons. They're like, ah, Jeskai needs something good. Let's make this 3-3. Put some blue on it.
Yeah, I'm gonna call this Tainted Boros.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, what are you gonna call it
when Phyrexian Mana comes back?
Look, that should never have happened in the first place. But that is a whole separate podcast. We gotta keep going.
Yeah.
All right. What did we have in sixth place? I think this one's the mono green deck, isn't it? This is Marcos Antonio Cordero Valle. Let's say, because someone has to butcher this.
Yeah.
Is he sixth place?
That's seventh place.
I'm sorry. Sixth place.
Realistically, they're all 5 through 8.
Is Marcio Carvalho. That's the mono green one.
Nissa and Ugin, BFFs.
Yep. Because why not? Now they were on the same plane, maybe? No.
I think Ugin was dead.
Yeah, Ugin had like, left.
Same plane, different time.
But we got more Hornet Queens. Huh?
This is just like mono green right now, the deck.
We got a Frontier Siege.
We do. I wonder if it was Khans or Dragons most of the time.
I'm gonna go Khans. Yeah, from what I saw, it was Khans. They just wanted the extra mana.
Yeah.
I mean, situationally, you can Dragons with your Hornet Queen, but most of the time it's probably Khans.
Right. All right, well, that was sixth place. Seventh place.
Was the long name again.
Seventh place is the long name again. Who is running? Looks like a white-blue deck.
Yep. And Requiescat Form, it's the white-blue aggro deck. Seen for a while, yeah, heroic.
Right.
Oh, I wish the website worked properly. All the auto card stuff is completely failing.
Yeah.
Not on mine. Maybe it's because you guys are going through Snowpocalypse.
Maybe. I think it pre-buffers everything on the page for you, and my ad block is like, no. So,
that's possible.
But yeah, it looks, I don't see anything especially out of the ordinary here.
And then in eighth place, we had Alexandre Habert? Let's say Habert. Who is running, what is this, a Sultai Whip deck?
Sidisi Whip, yeah.
Okay, Sidisi Whip.
Yay, standard.
So, Torrent Elemental.
GPs, monies, all that good stuff.
All right.
Seville.
So let's just take a quick review of our top eight. We had blue-white control, a pair of Abzan, green-red Devotionish, a Jeskai aggro, a mono-green, blue-white heroic, and a Sidisi Whip. That seems pretty diverse to me.
Yeah. It's not all Abzan.
Realistically, standard is very healthy. I mean, and I'm not the biggest, you know, standard flag bearer, but like I've played during the bad years and this is a very healthy format. There's legitimately 8 to 12 decks that you can win with.
Yeah. I'm also happy that there's a lot of decks that are running cards from the middle set, which a lot of the time doesn't actually happen.
By middle set, do you mean Fate Reforged?
Yeah.
Cause they overpowered Fate Reforged just a little bit to make sure that people would play those cards.
They really played up the rares and the mythics. And unfortunately, the limited format is suffering for it, but it seems to be working out pretty well for standard.
Oh, the limited format is suffering so bad because of it.
Very unfortunate.
All right. So before we leave GP Seville.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, where are we going?
There's something we should talk about.
On a journey.
But it's impassable.
Something. It is. It's totally. Travel is impossible. I'm sorry, Squee. You're gonna have to stay put. We can't bring you back from the graveyard yet.
Can I at least come back with a 1/1 spirit token?
We may delve you. Sorry.
Ooh. Ooh. I didn't think you was a delver, buddy.
Yeah, I'm certainly not. So hey, you know, we really should talk. Do you know what we have to talk about now? From GP to Seville.
Is it a number?
It is. Can you guess what number I'm thinking of?
7.
Nope, it's not
is
7.
Is it a prime number?
Yes.
Is it the number of colors in magic?
Until they give us purple, yes.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so the arbitrarily chosen, but probably the best 5 cards.
The top 5 cards of Grand Prix Seville. So, here's the thing. The top 5 cards this week are not numbered. Now, I'm going to assume that they're listed 5 through 1 rather than 1 through 5, but who knows?
Based on what I've seen, they look like they're in the right order.
Yeah, I think so too. So, number 5, everyone's favorite Obzon card, the Siege Rhino.
Rhino.
Because everybody wants a rhino. I mean, if you could have a pet rhino, wouldn't you?
Do I have to feed it?
All right, is everybody ready for the sad thought of the day? If you're not ready for a sad thought, just, you know, take off your headphones. Steve, take off your headphones, count to 10, put your headphones back on.
You don't know what Steve's ready for.
There were probably more rhinos at this tournament than there are in the world that are alive.
That is very sad.
See? Told you this was
very true.
And it's, man, I'm down. Aww. Number 4, Shaman of the Great Hunt.
Aww.
Who I didn't actually know was a card, I'll be honest.
Oh, come on. Yeah. It's red. You should like it.
I know. I just didn't know that it existed because, you know, there's some blue hybrid mana symbols that make me rather uncomfortable.
But they're also green clues.
Yeah, that's a little more soothing. But
think of all of the cards you can draw on your burn deck clues.
Yeah, well, I'd have to have green in my burn deck, which I don't.
But it has haste clues.
It does. That's your fault. It does.
4-2 with haste. I mean,
it makes all of your guys vampires.
It does. It does. Yeah. He's a vampire no, he's an orc shaman. Huh. I think they missed out there. Although Sorin is wandering around, so maybe that's it. Number 3 is Outpost Siege. Because dragons.
Because dragons.
Actually, I think it's because of cons.
Really? Think so? Let's see. At the beginning
it's definitely because of cons.
The next turn. Oh, yeah. It's probably because of cons, not because of dragons.
No.
Yep, you got me there.
The cons half of that does a lot of pretty amazing things.
Yeah, I mean, the dragon's half is kind of a boggart shenanigans. I like boggarts.
I don't think that's been a selling point.
Yeah, no. Probably not.
I think it's the fun of dashing a card to your hand, which is hilarious.
Number 2, Crux of Fate, which I've been told is the only card in Fate Reforged that references Nicol Bolas.
Probably.
Interesting.
So,
I have not confirmed that, but that makes sense.
That's your trivia, and as long as you don't look it up, it stays true. And number 1, Ugin the Spirit Dragon, because he's pretty good against decks that have permanence.
Yep.
Yeah, if you can get to 8, he's good.
One thing that I found interesting in the last round was that, so Ugin comes down and wipes the board, and then I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. And then he can, you know, just toss Ugin and take care of that other annoying creature. And then he's like, and then I'm going to tick up Ugin and bolt that. I'm like, oh, you can do that too. Yeah, that'll also take care of that annoying creature with much better returns.
Yeah, that'll... It's totally a good thing.
This dragon has 3 settings, and they're all murderous. Glorious. There's no stun on this dragon.
Set your Ugin to kill. Okay. All right, so those were your top 5 cards. Of GP Seville. So, all right, standards. Standards looking good, I guess.
Let's look at it some more.
So, since standards looking good, why don't we take a look at standard?
Ooh, okay.
What do
this
you
time
say?
It's Houston flavored.
So, Star City Games was down in Houston, Texas. Sorry, that was
Houston.
That was a New York joke for anybody. No? Okay.
I'm not from New York.
Where there were 427 players-ish for standard. Look, those numbers seem to fluctuate based on the GP, so 400-ish folks
like
came
that.
Out for standard. Did any of you watch any of this coverage?
Nope.
No.
Okay, well, that is not at all what I like to call helpful.
What, did
it's
you watch it?
Still.
I watched some of it on Saturday.
Well, there you go. You saw more than me did. Yeah, so go ahead, Clues. This is all you.
There were some...
You're a married man watching Star City on Valentine's Day?
There were... I don't believe in that holiday. There were people who were playing... The good news is my wife doesn't believe in that holiday either.
Oh,
so
that,
there
that's
were,
better then.
Look, here's a total digression and aside. If you're not telling your loved ones that you care about them every day of the year, Valentine's Day is not going to help. Cut it out, you bastards. So... there were people playing standard. That's all I really remember about the coverage. It was on as background noise while I was cleaning the kitchen.
That's
so.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. But I can tell you that Robert Burney won with Green Red Devotion.
Yep.
Yep.
So
heavily green, and hey, look, some Crater's Claw.
I was gonna say, what does that deck look like? It looks like it's that's a lot of green, isn't it?
Yeah, and Ugin's because Ugin.
Mystic, because Genesis, Ugin. Hydra,
Sylvan. Even the new Elspeth, a lot easier to cast.
Yeah. Yeah, looks like, and Crater's Claws. Yep. Cause.
Go all the way to the sideboard, I guess you could run one Xenaghost God of Revels.
Well, it's a fireball.
Yep.
Yeah, it really, maybe it's a better fireball if you've got big dudes.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay, it's a bonus fireball, I guess is what we'll call that.
When you have Nykthos, I mean, it's just better.
Yeah.
You're creating absurd amounts of mana. Oh man.
Well, he beat out Jeskai Tokens to take down the top spot. Jeskai Tokens? Okay, let's see. Now those guys and this guy. Oh, of course, the Soulfire Grandmaster, because why not? Ooh. Do you guys see what I see in this Jeskai Tokens deck?
Chandra? Jeskai Charm?
Yeah, Chandra Pyromaster. Jeskai Charm.
I don't know. I had like 40 choices here.
Looking for the blue cards, I see.
Yeah. You're doing it wrong, Angelo. Look for the red cards.
Admittedly, he could have been talking about treasure clues, but not in that tone.
No, definitely not. But yeah,
I really thought he was saying Hordling Outburst. But
Well, everybody loves the Hordling Outburst. But no, Chandra Pyromaster makes an appearance here, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I'm all in favor. What else have we got in the top eight here that might be useful to talk about? Looks like in third place, a red-green aggro deck. Fourth place, another Jeskai Tokens. Does it also have Chandra? Nope, and that's why it came in fourth. So.
That's the only reason, huh?
Yep, that's the lesson we have learned here.
Hey, it has Jeskai Charm.
I see.
Fifth place, Boros Aggro, because we have a perfectly good name for red-white, and if you're going to make me use Obzon, I'm using Boros.
Which they're not making you use Obzon. You're deciding to conform to them. I still call it, you know, junk.
Oh, because it is junk. It totally is. Totally is. But no, this Boros Aggro seems kind of nice to me. It's got Rabble Master. It's got Stormy. It's got King of the Kitties. It's got everything you could want.
Yeah, Brimaz seems like the greediest thing here, just as the double white.
Yeah.
But on the same note, he's pretty effective if it's turn four, too. He's kind of good.
And two copies of Chandra Pyromaster.
Yep.
So,
because you want cards, and you want them now.
That's right. And if you give me cards, I will use them right now.
And that's why you finished in fifth.
No, that was variance. Variance is why.
Oh, okay.
See, this is how you do it, right? You invoke variance whenever it doesn't fit with whatever your pet theory is.
That is how magic works.
Or at least that's my pet theory. And if it's not right, well, it's probably variance. So.
You're such a scientist, Clues.
Yeah, what I did there. So, in sixth place, Junk Midrange. In seventh place, blue-white. Can't remember who blue-white was.
Azurius?
Yes, Azurius. That's why I can't remember it, because I hate those guys.
Whoa. This list is a bit different. Resolute.
Yeah, this is new.
Okay, let's take a look at this blue-white control, this Azurius control. Oh, yeah. Hey, I was going to talk about the Pearl Link Ancient back when we were on the GP. Hey, what do you guys think of the Pearl Lake Ancient?
I think it's very effective at what it does.
Yeah, I think it's very strong to the point where you forget that it has prowess.
Yes, I think that is probably the line most people completely forget about. I did see, and I don't know if it was this guy's deck, but sometime on coverage, because I was bouncing back and forth on coverage here and there as I was doing stuff around the house, somebody actually did do the return three lands to return Pearl Link Ancient to their hand. So
were they returning Radiant Fountains?
That's totally a thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gain a bunch of life, return Pearl Lake Ancient, play again.
So let me tell you what I don't like about this blue-white control deck.
The blue?
There's not enough red.
That is the thing.
There seems to be just the perfect number of red in here. Like, there's a Faded Retribution. That word's English and stuff. Faded Retribution.
That's a lot of mana.
Yes, and they get there.
To blow up everything.
When you gotta kill an Ugin. And any creatures that are on the board, it works.
Admittedly, when Ugin happens, he's already killing all the creatures on the board, so you don't have as much to lose.
Well, he might have creatures, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible.
Only one who's a little bit surprised that we're seeing Jace's Ingenuity these days? Has it been there all along and I just didn't notice?
Jace's Ingenuity is your go-to draw three cards when you're in a control deck thing right now.
But we have Dig Through Time and we have Treasure Cruise in Standard.
And we have Divination, and you can play all of them, and that's what makes blue so wonderful.
Jace's Ingenuity is an instant. Dig Through Time is also an instant, but you don't get three cards. And sometimes you need that. Plus, you're already running three Dig Through Times. Hmm. You get both.
Okay, well, I think that you damn blue players should just deal with having one card a turn like the rest of us, rather than being jerks.
Weren't you pushing Chandra just a second ago, buddy?
Yeah, really.
Variants, right.
Variants, okay.
Check.
Glad we're both on the same page now. So, in eighth place.
Oh, hey, there was red in that deck. There's a Soulfire Grandmaster. I don't know what you're whining about.
Like, yes, there was. Soulfire Grandmaster. There's red in his thing.
He's red on his mother's side.
Okay. In eighth place, we had a green-red devotion deck, and that rounds out your top eight. Anything cool going on outside of the top eight?
Do you like mono-red aggro?
Yes, I do.
Well, there's a few of those.
Yeah, there are. Let's take a look at what does a mono-red aggro look like these days? So let's take a quick look at this 15th place deck from Dylan Lurch. We've got Fire Drinker Satyrs, Foundry Street Denizens, The Rabble Master, Mardu Scout, and Monastery Taylor Swift Spear. That's pretty awesome. 22 Mountains. I would love to deck check this deck.
There's also 1 in 10th.
Cause it's 4-4-4-4-4, 22 Mountains, 2-2-3-4-3-4, you're done. That's great. I love it.
If you look at the 10th place one, it has Prophetic Flame Speaker in it, in the sideboard.
Huh.
I guess you forgot that existed too.
Yeah, actually, I kind of did.
Yeah.
Prophetic Flame Speaker. A double strike? Trample? I like a 1-3?
Keep reading it.
Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of your library. You may play it this turn.
It's double strike red card advantage, Clues.
I'll take it.
That's things like blue. Just saying.
Yeah, with the double red and its mana cost, you're right. It's totally blue.
But it lets you play extra cards, you know? You red players should really learn how to play with one card.
But here's the difference. Here's the difference. We still have to pay for them.
Yeah. But you really, wait. I guess
you still have to pay for the blue ones.
Yeah.
Variants. We've talked about this. Which, by the way, the title of this episode might be Variants. We'll see. So, anything else in this top, 32-ish card?
I'm sure there's something, but I don't see it immediately.
Neither do I.
Standard is very healthy. Look at all those decks.
That Standard is going well. I think we're all happy with Standard right now, let's say.
So let's enjoy it for a month. By the way, previews start in a week.
Wow.
Really?
I don't know that I'm ready for previews yet.
Yeah, they start in about a week because it's a big set, so 3 weeks of them plus a week off. Hey, it comes out in a month. So there you go.
Wow. Ugh. Okay, well, there were other things going on at the Star City event. Of course, Standard was the main draw this particular weekend since the Opens are now kind of like GPs. So the big side events, the Legacy and the Modern events. Let's take a quick look at those. In Legacy, we had...
Me more.
147 players show up, and beating them all was Jeffrey Chen, who was playing, of all things, and I'm shocked to be saying this, Food Chain. I didn't expect this at all.
Probably I forgot this card existed.
Well, I knew it existed, but I didn't remember that it was used in this context. So this is Legacy Food Chain. Not to be confused with Food Chain Goblins, which is a vintage deck, cause they've got recruiters and Legacy doesn't. But you know, the main trick you're going to be using here. So Food Chain, for those who don't recall, and I swear I won't go this in depth on the rest of the decks. Food Chain is an enchantment that basically, it's two and a green for an enchantment that basically says, exile a creature you have, add X mana of any color to your mana pool, where X is the removed creature's converted mana cost plus one, so it gains you mana. This mana may only be spent to play creature spells. So, what do you abuse in Legacy with that? Well, how about Mist Hollow Griffin? You guys remember Mist Hollow Griffin? One of many interesting cards from the Innistrad block. It is a 3/3 flyer that you can cast from exile. So here's the two-card combo.
Yep.
You get out your Food Chain, you exile Mist Hollow Griffin to net yourself 5 mana, then you replay Mist Hollow Griffin, and you've still got 1 mana left. Wash, rinse, repeat, you now have infinite mana. And if you do it right, you can have infinite mana of pretty much any color you want, as long as you keep enough additional blue in your pool to make sure Mist Hollow Griffin can keep coming down. Now, you might be saying to yourself, well, great, you have infinite mana, now what? Well, a lot of folks like to go the Emrakul route, because then you can just get yourself to 15, cast an Emrakul, call it a day. But that's not what's going on here in Jeffrey's desk. He's on the Tidespout Tyrant plan.
Yeah, I like it.
You would, you blue jay.
And that is miserable.
Tidespout Tyrant, here's what you need to know. Whenever you play a spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand. It's a 5/5 creature. It costs a bajillion D mana, but they're making a bajillion D anyway. And then they just keep cycling that Mist Hollow Griffin, and they take away all of your stuff.
Yep.
Now, they don't really take it away. They stick it in your hand, but then they beat you to death.
And you will not have land in play.
Yeah, you won't have anything in play, so... Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Now, not only that, but hey, you know what the dream play for this deck is? It's when they try and jam the food chain and their opponent goes, no, we're going to counterspell that. And they go, you know, I think I'll cast Force of Will, and why don't I exile this, Mist Hollow Griffin to it?
Ha! That's so nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty sick.
Totally a thing. So that was Food Chain.
Running the Manipulate Fate just on principle.
It took down first place. It beat Miracles. So take that, Miracles. Rounding out the top eight, in third place we had Miracles. In fourth place, Some Flavor of Storm. I really wish they'd label these better. At first glance, this seems like Tess.
There's the tendrils.
Well, as opposed to Ant.
Yeah. That's all I can help you with
I
there.
I think this is Tess, but I always get them.
There's an Ad Nauseam, and there's a Tendrils.
Yeah. So fifth place we had Cloud Post. Sixth and seventh were both Death and Taxes. And in eighth place, because we couldn't go a week without it, it is a Delver deck. In this case, Jeskai Delver, let's say. Yeah, looks like Jeskai Delver.
Yeah.
Which I think we used to have a better name for this, but there it is. America Delver?
America. French Delver?
French Delver. Yes. It's very vanilla. It's French. No.
This is Tess.
It is Tess.
Just wanted you to know. I checked. This is Tess. Okay. That's what I was looking for.
Good.
He has no real other, storm targets realistically in the deck. So that makes this Tess in my eyes.
Yeah. And I think the main at a glance difference you can find between them is that Ant will run, Wishes and Tess does not.
Right. Yeah, usually, Ant has in its place for its Past in Flames, it'll have Wish packages where the Eternal Storm likes its Past in Flames.
Yeah, sure does. Alright, so that is your top eight in the Legacies, out there outside of the top eight. Special Lovin' goes to 16th place, which is Burn. So thank you, Ben Henkes, for the Burn list out here. And that is your top five. No, that's a different segment. And that is Legacy. So anybody want to talk about Modern, which I know absolutely nothing about?
Paulo says it's bad, so we should just stay.
Yeah, that's later in the show if we have time.
Okay.
127 players showed up for Modern. And Decepticons wins.
Yeah, it beat Burn.
Hey, actually, I kind of love the top two. Yeah, so it was Decepticons v. Burn in the finals, and Decepticons came out on top. I'm actually a little surprised by that. I could see it going that way. I mean,
I imagine everyone sort of set up their boards to fight Obzon, given what happened a week ago with like a third of the field being Obzon.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have the pieces, you can't fight it. So.
Yeah, and if Decepticons can ensoul any of their artifacts, Burn's not removing that from the board. Not easily.
Nope.
What kind of sideboard hate did Burn have for the artifacts here? Deflecting.
Revelry?
Smash to Smithereens. There it is.
Destructive Revelry, Smash to Smithereens.
Where?
Yeah, where? Yeah, he actually has a good bit in here.
He does. Well, it wasn't enough to take it down, so Jason Coe with Decepticons beats Matthew Peacock, who was on Burns. In third place, we had a deck whose name should not be spoken. In fourth place...
All the more it is.
Yes. We had Jeskai Twin and Temur Twin in fourth and fifth. So your twin decks, yeah, those are still pretty good. Sixth place goes with third. Okay, look, it's in fact third and sixth. They're in fact, it's a mechanic that shouldn't exist. We all know it. You know it. I know it. Even Morrow knows it. Even if he won't admit it, he still knows. He knows what he did.
Not like Wither.
Spot skeeters are awesome.
And in seventh place, Burn. And in eighth place, Junk Midrange. So, there you go. Honorable mentions, I guess, go to 12th place Merfolk.
Yeah, I actually expected that to do a little better because the Italians had a very good performance as far as their modern decks went during the PT. Like, they did really well with Merfolk. I really expected it to do better this week.
Yeah.
Very well.
I kind of feel like maybe he should have main deck chalices in this Merfolk list. I mean, once you get your Aether Vial out there, you can wreck face with. I don't know. I digress. Sorry.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Good on you, Kenny Hudman, for representing with the tribal deck there, even if it is the wrong tribe.
Ooh,
what would you want, Kithkin?
Oh yeah, right. Sure, Kithkin. Totally about the Kithkin. It used to
fairies.
Riggers. I am all about the Rigger deck.
Oh, I was just about to guess Noggle too.
okay, so
they're
anything,
adorable.
Anything else we want to say about this modern tournament before we move on?
No.
Okay.
Nothing in particular is striking me. I mean, it's one of those things where we all cared about modern a week ago.
Right.
Now that time has passed.
Well, you know, speaking of which, I do want to go ahead and jump to something that was later in the show notes, but I've moved it up because I have editing privileges. Let's talk about an article that came out today from none other than Paolo Vitor Damodarosa, good old Paolo, who says modern has a problem. Have you guys read this article?
I read part of it, and then I skimmed over a lot of the middle, and then I'm like, you know, no, that's fair. That matches my feelings. So
I perused it, and I'm not a fan of modern anyway, so like I'm just going to agree with everything he says.
Yeah, we might be the wrong people to look objectively at an article that says that modern has a problem.
I don't agree with everything that he said, so I guess I can at one point or another point things out. But yeah, so the basic backbone of his article is that he takes the recent Pro Tour and he shows you the breakdown of, you know, all of the main archetypes for the event. And very clearly from the count on it, he breaks out that the top decks are Abzan, Burn, Infect, and Decepticons. And then he sort of digresses about the fact that this is a format where your sideboard is pretty much the win or lose for your event because so many of these decks are either combo-rific or otherwise just hard to interact with unless you have a silver bullet that your sideboard is pretty much determining, like, did you pick the right ones? You can't reasonably with 15 cards address every archetype when there are so many of them. So you pick which ones you want to auto-win or auto-lose against. And while I think that's a bit extreme, it does reflect a problem that people have in a lot of formats. And in this case, it's very easy to especially point that out. Would you guys like to talk a little bit more on it before I make more broad generalizations?
Well, you know, it actually brings up a point that was kind of sticking in my head when I was watching the modern Pro Tour coverage a couple of weeks back. And the Amulet Bloom deck that won, I couldn't help but think that that deck just simply died to Blood Moon.
It did.
It was just totally done to Blood Moon. And,
yep.
You know, as Paolo's trying to point out here, there are decks that if you have the answer, if you've got the silver bullet, they're done for. If you don't have the silver bullet, you're done for. And so I feel I agree with a lot of what he's saying.
I agree with that part, but at the same time, like, I mean, I know you play Legacy. I play Legacy.
I do, yeah.
And that's how Legacy sideboards are, too. You have to put in all the silver bullets. And, you know, you take your 15 slots and you say, look, this is the field that I expect, and these are the cards I'm putting in for that field. And if you come ill-prepared, whoops.
Yeah, I mean, the metagame is itself part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, that part necessarily I don't completely agree with because I'm used to it from, you know, playing Legacy. Like, you know, that's part of an eternal format or a non-rotating format, as they like to call modern. I don't know why they just don't call it eternal. But that's part of the game plan. Like, you have so many cards and so many decks in there that you can't prepare for everything. So, you know, you clearly see that 50% of the field from the last PT was five decks. So you prepare for those five decks and hope that you don't run into something else. And if you do, well, it happens.
Now, here again, it illustrates a point that I think a lot of folks, including people on this show, have been making for a long time, that having multiple buys at a big tournament, having two or three buys,
huge,
is so huge because you don't have to metagame against the, I'm not going to call them the janky decks. I'm going to call them the second tier decks, the chaff, the random decks. You don't have to worry about some crazy random homebrew that's just going to destroy your deck but has no real shot against most of the field. All you have to worry about is what are the decks, quote unquote, that I'm going to see. And when you've got two or three rounds of chaff that you don't have to fight through, you're going to be playing winning decks, which means you're going to be playing the metagame you expect, which means you can sideboard against the metagame you expect. So it's a huge advantage to have.
On top of everything else that's nice about starting with three wins, more sleep, a good breakfast, better tiebreakers than everyone else in the field.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's so much easier to go 4-2 than it is to go 7-2.
Yeah.
So much easier.
Anyway, so Paulo does make some suggestions on how to quote-unquote fix it.
I do not agree with them. But
yeah, I was going to say, what did you think about Paulo's suggestions?
Okay, so his first suggestion, just for reference, because this makes Clues happy, is that he thinks they should unban Ancestral Vision.
Great.
And also Jace the Mind Sculptor and Bloodbraid Elf.
I agree with Jace, not Bloodbraid.
I actually agree with all three of these.
See, I don't think realistically Prowess should be legal in any format, like, or not Prowess, but
a Cascade.
Cascade, yeah. They should just get rid of all Cascade cards from all formats because they're just not good for it. Playing free stuff is bad. Like, they've said this a bazillion times. And Bloodbraid Elf, it always gets the right answer. Always.
Can you build your deck for it?
Right.
The problem is if you unban Jace, which I think they can and I think they should, I'm not going to say you have to unban Bloodbraid.
Are you okay?
Well, no, okay, look.
No, this has been his one concession to blue decks in the last year.
I have been saying this for a while, that I think that Jace would be okay in Modern. I think that there are enough good creatures and there are enough good answers to Planeswalkers that a Planeswalker that costs 4 mana is not all that big of a problem. Don't get me wrong. It is a very powerful card.
Right.
It is arguably the best Planeswalker, maybe even the best card to be printed since Alpha. But the fact of the matter is that there are enough answers to Planeswalkers, and if your opponent is tapping out for 4 mana on turn 4 to put down their Jace, there are lots of decks that are just going to combo off while the shields are down.
Right, they're just going to beat them. That's where the timer has been set in the format. It's usually like turn 4, and
yeah,
right. If they go, okay, I go ahead and I plop my Jace down, they're going to go, okay, Splitter Twin, I win.
I also think that I think Jace is okay. I understand them being very hesitant about doing it. I think it's okay because they've actually changed the rules of the game in a manner that affect Jace. Because when we last had him running around in like the standard environment, we were operating on the legend rule where really it was like, you know, whoever stuck their Jace first got an activation and the other one at most could blank it.
Yeah, well, that's why you played 3 mana Jace to kill the 4.
Well, that was the thing. It became this Jace fight. And now it's a case where you can resolve your Jace, and then they can resolve their Jace, and then you both took turn 4 off before you go back to sissy fighting with your blue decks. I do think that it's okay. I also think that it would realistically turn into one of those things, like I imagine it does in the Legacy Vintage world, where, oh, look, it's Jace, and that's just what it happens. I don't know that that's going to solve his problem, though.
Yeah.
Adding these cards will make those decks that want to run them more consistent.
Yes.
And I think what he really wants to do is just consolidate the field to have less viable decks so that you can properly sideboard for what's there. And that sort of goes against everything that we just defined as a healthy format.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism of this suggestion. Now, I still would like to see, and I think it may have been Jack who was advocating for this for a long time, unban everything.
Oh, yeah.
A while. Now, don't do it forever. just say, okay, look,
Countertop wins every modern event for the next year.
This set is dropping, you know, in a couple of weeks. What if when the banned and restricted announcement from that comes out, what if we just unban everything, but we're going back to banning a bunch of this crap when, what should be, Omega hits and instead is Magic Origins. Just to see what would happen.
What would happen?
So interesting.
It would be this wonderful world of Dark Depths turned to, oh look, I have a thing, you're dead.
No, realistically, this is what I truly believe it would be. It would be Affinity because all of a sudden those lands would be back. Those horrible, horrible lands that should never have been printed. And it would be Countertop. Because basically, if you look at the Miracle deck, it's almost modern legal. You take out Force of Will, you take out just a couple cards, it's modern legal. That thing would wreck shop in a world of modern, short of, you know, against like Affinity and things like that. Because Affinity can go up to 7, it doesn't really matter, and you, the Countertop's not prepared for, you know, to counter a 7 drop.
Yeah, I guess the real impact would be a very blue world, and all tournaments would go to time all the time.
Yes. Oh yeah, all those top activations would be so horrible.
Yeah, because, you know, if I had a magic wand and I could just get rid of one card and one card only, it might be top.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Why? I don't think anyone would stop you.
Top is a big reason why I won't play EDH.
If I could get rid of two cards, it would be Top and Jite. And it's actually weird to hear me say that out loud because those are two artifacts. Those aren't even blue cards.
They're acknowledged as mistakes, though.
Oh, yeah. Big, big mistakes. But hey, he's got a second suggestion for how to fix Modern. And this one I think is interesting. I don't think I care for
it. I don't like it.
No.
But his other possible solution is, hey, what if we just made the sideboard bigger? Since you got to pack silver bullets anyway, what if we give you a bigger clip? So what if it were 20 cards in Modern?
That is not solving the problem at all.
Yeah, it's just, where does it end?
Well, right? Okay, so say right now there are 15 cards in your sideboard, and you decide that you're going to allocate 3 of those cards per deck. So you can silver bullet 5 decks. Now you can silver bullet 6 to 7 decks. That's still not solving the main problem, but it is making some of them that are easier to silver bullet just not viable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in this giant field, if everyone could literally take their exact deck right now, but add 2 Blood Moon or 2, you know, Artifact Hate or 2 whatever, all it really means is that all of these decks, all these games are even more determined by, well, I boarded in my 5 or 6 whatever, let's see who flips their Blood Moon or their, you know, Trump card first, and then they're just really, really boring to play. As it is, your sideboard at 15 gives you enough that you can say, I am definitively not losing to this 1 or 2, and then my actual deck has to be able to deal with the rest well enough, and I think that's where the skill intensity of the format lies.
I can't expound on that any better. Well said there, Squee. 15 cards is a good number. Plus, you'll have to buy more sleeves.
Oh god, that'd be horrible.
Because you need those 5 extra. You know, like when you buy the tournament sleeves, you know, they give you just enough to where you have those 5 extra sleeves in there in case you split some during a tournament. And then you'll have to buy a whole nother pack because this 80 just doesn't work anymore. It's just horrendous. No, we can't do this.
Oh, and here's a weekly PSA. If you're going to a big tournament, buy some new sleeves. Seriously, your sleeves are janky. They're kind of disgusting. No one wants to touch them. Get some new sleeves.
Yeah.
You will accidentally mark your cards, too.
Yeah.
Any big tournament, new pack of sleeves. No more than 3 FNMs per set of sleeves.
I mean, look at it this way. I almost DQ'd Mike from the mana pool once, and it was because of sleeves.
They're marked. It's so easy to just play with clean sleeves. You might as well do it.
Yeah.
And compare the cost of sleeves to the cost of the stuff that you're sleeving.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I mean, even at GPs, like, I make day 2, I'm buying a new set of sleeves.
Absolutely.
Because 9 rounds is a long time. Yeah.
They tear, they smudge your icky fingerprints.
All that Mountain Dew that you drink.
Dual mark things.
Fingers, and let's not forget that, you know, cheese steaks and things like that are real that you go eat. And then you grab your cards.
While we're at it, wash your hands. Seriously. Yes.
You're in public. Do it.
That is a great PSA there. Like, I don't know how many times I've gone to GPs, gone to the bathroom, and then saw somebody just wander straight out. And it's like, I hope I don't play you. That's gross.
Yeah, and it's not even like it's an isolated – it's not even just like one of them. It's like a steady stream of – what's wrong with you people? You were taught better than that, I would hope.
I would hope. Apparently
not. Can you call a judge and ask them to make your opponent wash their hands?
We No.
PCI hygiene rules.
I mean, we want to create a friendly and welcoming environment for all players. But that's also on you, players. Try and not be disgusting, please.
In life.
We don't want to have awkward conversations. Anyway, so that was Paolo's article about the problems in Modern and our problems with filthy, filthy sleeves.
The one thing I will say, though, about this, where I said I don't agree with the Blood Braid, you can scratch that for me and put Deathrite Shaman in its place, and I would be fine with that.
Okay, so you want to unban Deathrite, leave out Blood Braid?
Yes. I think that'd be fair.
I think that's viable.
I can dig it. I can dig it. So, on to other news. So,
Ajax.
We have had a announcement from our good friends in Seattle who have a wonderful announcement for one of their friends in Las Vegas. And that is that the next From the Vault set has been announced, and it is From the Vault Angels. So, how do we feel about this? Wait.
15 of your favorite villains from Neon Genesis Evangelion will team up to go away. This one's a D8, and it has a drill on it.
It's just a square, and then it opens up and it shoots a laser.
As you do.
So the box of 15 shiny cards that a lot of you will try and get and not find, at least not at MSRP, is From the Vault Angels. It's going to be dropping in August of this year. We have a new piece of art from it. Can anyone name what the art is?
That better be Twilight Shepherd.
Possibly. That's a good guess.
I was thinking Desolation Angel.
All I can say is it's an angel.
It is. It's a woman with wings.
Yes.
And swords.
Sure is.
So, do you want to speculate on the cards likely to be in the set?
Sure. Why not?
Yet another Achroma. Let's just start right there.
There's gonna be an Achroma. I don't know which one.
Yeah, there will be a Sarah, guaranteed.
Most likely going to be a Sarah, so there's two cards. I think there's going to be an Avacyn, just because she's very popular with the EDH crowd.
Yeah. I could see getting some non-traditional angels. Like, they'll probably put Entreat the Angels in it.
Yeah, I could see.
Linvala, probably, because it's a big card.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
People seem to get. Yeah, it's... I don't know.
I hope they don't just grab half the list of the cool angels that were in the Divine versus Demonic deck, because that would feel sort of like a cop-out, even though they had some very iconic ones in it. Like, I don't think we're going to get another Rhea Dawnbringer since she has so many promo versions now.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I hope not. Really hope not. I can see, what is the, from Ravnica, the black-white one. Destroys permanents. Yeah, that one. That one's coming back, probably, because they need a black angel, so there you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have to look at other colors, so Angel of Despair is a very popular one.
Okay.
Resto, maybe?
Oh, please, God, no.
What?
Because there's already enough white angels that we talked about.
Okay, Aurelia.
We need Aurelia.
We had her recently. Bassandra? How about Bassandra, if you want to have a Boros angel?
Okay, they could bring back all three Powerpuff Girls.
They could. That would be interesting.
I don't think they would, but...
No, I think they'll bring back one, but not all
three. I think if they bring back Avacyn, they're probably not bringing back the Powerpuff Girls. They like to spread these out over the history of the game. Doing, like, a cycle seems like they wouldn't do it in a 15-card set.
Right. I am having troubles coming up with good... Like, lots of white angels, those are easy, but coming up with non-white angels is very, very tricky.
Yeah.
Shannara?
I mean, realistically, even though it's a white angel, they have to put Baneslayer Angel in, right?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
I mean, Baneslayer Angel was like a format-defining angel.
What about Platinum Angel? Will they bother wasting a slot on Platinum?
It's the only artifact
colorless
angel.
Artifact angel?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one's pretty easy to discern. This is completely baseless speculation.
Oh, it's completely
baseless.
You know,
like, half four picks are just wrong.
Do you think they might do Angelic Destiny?
Because
we haven't seen that in a bit.
Maybe. I was always a fan of that card, so I'm hoping.
It always felt to me like it was published, like it was pumped ahead, like it was supposed to come in Avacyn Restored, but they moved it to the core set because they had to shift something.
Uh-huh.
Because it really felt like everything in the mechanics of it were Avacyn Restored, but it ended up being an M12 instead.
What about Angel of Serenity? She was a defining card when she was in Standard.
Maybe. There's a lot of possibilities. I do think it's certainly possible that they're going to not make it just a straight White Angel set, like you're saying, because they try to spread these out. But Angel is so iconically a white thing that it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. Now, that said, I can't think of any cards that would be bank-breaking that will be in this.
True.
So,
Iona? Oh, we could have Iona.
Yeah, that'd be neat. Iona, there's Lightning Angel will probably come back because they need some red.
I also think that we'll have Vault of the Archangel.
Oh, because they always like to get a land in somewhere.
They always like to get a land in. Okay. I'm going to say Alt Art Vault of the Archangel.
That's Cease Play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds perfectly viable. But yeah, I don't think they're going to put anything super money in here, so you might actually have an okay chance at getting it. We say that these things are impossible to find, but honestly,
last year, Zach can go to a local game shop and pick it up at retail right now because it was bad.
Because it didn't have Damnation.
Yeah, it was
just come out and say it. That was the thing. Like, we all wanted exactly the one card and it wasn't there. So come on, Modern Masters 2. or 2015 or whatever.
I just want them to reprint Goyf again. That's all.
Just yeah, you know, until its price gets under control, they've kind of got to find a way to do that.
Well, from the vault, the price Goyfs. Went up since the last time they printed it. Who knows?
From the vault, Goyfs.
We could have Magnivore. We can have Lagorf.
Yeah, we'll have Lurigoy.
Mistform Ultimus. Chameleon Colossus.
We'll have.
Well, there's what Magnivore's a Goyf. Tarmogoyf's a Goyf.
I was going to say, do we have 15 Goyfs? Hold on.
Lurgoyf. It's a Goyf.
Hold
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Lurgoyf. There's three.
there might actually be enough, but I don't think that's happening. We need Slivergoyf to be printed. Just on principle.
Just on principle. Absolutely.
It has the abilities of all slivers in all graveyards. That would be awesome.
All right, let's see just how many Lurgoyfs there actually are in Magic's history. Just to see if we actually have 15 of them. Okay, we're going to need some more cards because there are only 8.
Well, we have Chameleon Colossus.
Green Sun Zenith.
Yeah, right. I mean, you got to go get them. They got to put a land in there.
Hey,
so.
Why not Birthing Pod? You could use that to get a Goyf. Oh, that's banned.
Okay.
Hey, we'll do it anyway.
It's fine.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can run our changeling land so that we have our land Goyf.
Yeah, so that is from the Vault Angels. We don't know anything more than that. It was just announced today.
MSRP's for doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's right. It MSRP's for you're not getting it for that, but theoretically $34.99. So there you go. More news on that.
All your stores now. Just do available. It now. By the time you hear this, it's probably too late. But go ahead and call it. Put it on order if you want it.
So, other things, Magic happening in other media. You know, I think we should skip down to another item first, since we're
agreed.
Talking stuff. Why don't we take a quick look at the Kiora versus Elspeth dual deck that is coming out? The lists for those have been spoiled or previewed or told to us.
And look, they're awesome.
They've been released.
We know what those are now. Okay, so if you're a fan of Kiora and or Elspeth, stop being a fan of Kiora and be a fan of Elspeth, and those decks are now announced. So, anything in here surprise you guys? Anything?
Yeah, just stop being a fan of both of them and be a fan of Mother of Runes, because that's amazing.
Yeah, okay, so there are, as always, there are cards with new art, and one of the cards with new art is Mother of Runes. And, oh my, this art.
Hey look, it's Therese Nielsen. You could tell by the art, and also her name is on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And once
again, colors.
She has made awesome, awesome art. This will be the money card in these, I would say.
Very likely.
Probably. I mean, well, that or Occasion Javeliers. I mean.
These are going to be $20 at Target. You can get them if you want them.
Right.
Yeah.
And you probably want them.
You probably want them. Yeah, I know I'll be buying a copy because I'm
like, what's going on in the set symbol for this?
It's a panda bear.
I mean, it does, in fact, look like some kind of cute animal is trying to hug me, and it has little kitty ears on it.
Yeah. It is. I think it might be a monkey, actually.
That's not a monkey. That's a kitty cat. Yeah, that's a kitty cat with two tails.
I don't know. If you look at it in the common symbol, where it's just black and white, I think it's a little monkey.
I see a kitty cat.
it looks like a cat with two tails.
Well, anyway, it's going to hug you. That's what
it definitely saying. Looks like it wants to hug you.
Yeah. I do like the art on the Acacia Javeliers. I'm just saying. The new art is cool. But that's a horrible card from Fallen Empires? Oh, jeez.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I guess we should go down what the rares are, because that's what people are really waiting for.
I suppose so. I was trying to find a release date on this. Does anybody know?
Like Friday, something.
Like any time now.
Like yeah, they like tend to release these like a week after they drop it. Not that they tell you on the website.
Yeah, realistically, I do think I saw one of these at Walmart already.
Really?
It's certainly possible. They're really bad at that.
They are pretty terrible at that. Okay, so the rares and mythics at all in these decks. So, of course, the Kiora deck has Kiora, not surprising there. Inkwell Leviathan, Simic Sky Swallower, Scourge of Fleets. Is that it for the rares on this?
Possibly.
No, Plasm Capture.
Oh.
In the instance.
Forgot about that.
And, any of these.
Check out that Temple of the False God. It's not rare, but it's pretty.
It is pretty.
Oh, and Whelming Wave in the sorceries.
Whelming.
I'm totally whelmed by that card. But yeah, so there you go. Those are your expensive quote unquote cards in the Kiora deck. And how about in that Elspeth deck?
We have Guscoat Savior. Because I actually don't have a good reason for it. We have Elspeth. I mean,
wait, which Elspeth? We should be specific.
Sun's Champion.
Okay.
The one you can already, still play in Standard.
Yeah, we have Captain of the Watch. Again, because it's soldiers. You gotta do that, I suppose. Let's see. Precinct Captain, was that?
Yep.
No.
Precinct Captain's a rare.
That's a rare. Decree of Justice. EDH players, listen up. And those are
Dictate of Heliod.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think we're short by at least one.
Yeah.
The Dictate of Heliod is the other one, I think.
Yep.
Alright, so those are hitting store shelves maybe already. These
they
are
shouldn't be, but maybe.
These are not, I repeat, not standard legal. Do not take these to FNM and play them. I don't even think they're modern legal, because I think at least a few of these cards did not appear in sets that are in modern.
It's certainly possible.
It's possible. But the cards inside may be. You can definitely play with this Elspeth.
You can use these cards in formats where they are legal.
That's right. You can totally break these apart and put these cards in deck, but don't just go and sleeve up the Elspeth one and take it to your FNM. That's not going to work out well for anybody involved.
You will be sad.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. Just don't do it. But if they are at all like the more recent dual decks, they will play pretty well against each other. So they're built with that in mind. They've gotten pretty good at it. I see no reason why this one won't also be fun to play with.
Yeah, what he said and stuff.
All right.
So now let's look at Magic outside of Magic, let's say, I guess.
Oh, just to clarify before, it is February 27th is when these are supposed to come
out. So end of the month is when you'll see these on
store
shelves.
A week from Friday.
If you see them already on store shelves, tell someone, because that's not right.
Tisk, tisk.
It should not happen.
Well, what if I want to buy them?
I am
buy
not.
Buy them and then tell somebody?
I am not going to weigh in on that.
Also, I pulled up a larger version of the set symbol. It is, in fact, a castle that has waves crashing into each side of it.
It is?
So there you go.
Where'd you find that?
I looked up the original announcement, which has the giant symbol and the date it comes out.
Well, let's see a link. Just paste that in the chat.
Sure. Do-do-do.
Because I want to see
you would think they would link back to these, but you would be wrong.
You would be totally 100. Hey, it's totally a castle with waves crashing against it. Look at that.
With big Lego circles on it for reasons.
Or it's a kitty cat.
Aw, look at that kitty cat made out of Legos.
It's a Lego kitty cat.
Lego kitty cat.
So did you know that there are ways to play Magic that don't involve Magic cards?
Mental Magic?
Mental Magic is one of them, but no, that's not what I'm thinking of. No, I am thinking of electronic Magic, which we're not yet to MTGO. That's coming soon. We're not there yet. But some Duels of the Planeswalkers news, I guess.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that game that I haven't played since the first one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Duels of the Planeswalkers. If you enjoy your Duels of the Planeswalkers on the go.
Or you like funny pictures of Garrick.
Or you like very funny pictures of Garrick. There's some stuff coming your way, I guess?
Yes.
Anybody, she old red.
Anybody know anything about this? Because I sure don't.
Nope.
They are releasing essentially small expansions.
And I think this is free. I thought I saw that somewhere.
They don't mention a price, so
yeah,
I would
they
hope
just
so.
Give it to you. They're
yeah,
just like,
I think
here we go.
I think this one's a gimme.
Yeah, Valentine's Day gift. Aw.
Now, something that we'll hear a little bit later on, did I hear that they're actually going to go to quarterly updates for Duels of the Planeswalkers rather
than
annual?
You did hear that.
Okay, so I guess in all of your Duels of the Planeswalkers news, first of all, if you have Duels of the Planeswalkers 2015, was that what it was labeled? Yeah, Magic 2015, yeah. The Planeswalkers. Some extra cards coming your way real soon. The Master of Monsters card pack will include some stuff, maybe some things. Enjoy. Let's say. Yeah,
the cards that they have marked here is like Sheold Red, Whispering One, Kalastra, Highborn, Utavara Hellkite, Warp World. Let's see if we can break the system. Crater of Behemoth and Mass Admirers.
All right, so.
You see, the Warp World is there so that you can actually perform a bench test of your new PlayStation. Aww.
Aww. Hey, that's part of the reason I don't play this.
There you go. So but yeah, actually you should just click on it to look at this picture of Garrick.
Yeah, it fun. Is. It is pretty.
Yeah, he got a balloon.
Does normal Garrick have a giant S on his belt as well?
I don't know.
Or is that Super a lightning Garrick. Bolt? I don't know what it is.
Super Garrick.
It is.
I guess.
Garrick's super sad looking.
I like to think that he just destroyed like a prize fighter and took his belt because that's what Garrick does.
That, but it's a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Garrick is now wearing the championship belt. That's what
anyway,
happens when
and,
you cost that much mana.
And the other news about Duels of the Planeswalkers, it's gonna be released more often. Or something. I'm not sure they're gonna release full new ones every quarter. It may just be like update packs.
I think they're trying to tie updates to it with the update cycle of the game itself.
Ah, okay.
Which is why they say for a year, because the structure going forward is going to be big set, small set at 4 points. I think they're just trying to make it sync up.
Okay, that would make some sense. But if that's not enough Magic for you, you could, if you were so inclined, play a Magic the Gathering board game.
Board game.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet,
but
in
I
the
mean,
future.
There will come a time.
There will.
There will. So the Magic the Gathering.
Things about the board game.
Magic the Gathering board game, Arena of the Planeswalkers. It features Planeswalkers. You'll never guess which Planeswalkers it is. Now, for just a minute, I want you, Steve, to close your eyes. I mean, unless you're getting on or off the bus. Close your eyes, or your stop's coming up.
No, if you're getting off the bus, please close your eyes.
And tell me, are we talking about things this week with a board game, or last week with Magic Origins? The Planeswalkers in this set are Gideon, Jace, Liliana, Chandra, and Nyssa.
Gideon was previously a mystery.
So, hey, it is kind of like, it's almost like they worked that out ahead of time, you know, maybe with branding so that they could line these up.
My guess is it was just a lucky coincidence. I mean, they can't get decks in order, right?
Yeah, they totally can't get decks in order. You're right.
So did you notice how in the pictures that they give us here, the tiny Gideon has a red flare whip thing that I forget the name of, but the picture of the one has a clear one?
Huh, that is interesting.
I was going to say, I see the clear one. I don't see the red one. Oh,
like, if you scroll up to the box.
Okay, I see that. You know what? That seems like something Wizards would do.
I'm betting that at least one of them was a prototype or a mock-up.
I'm sure all of this is mock-up.
There's a pretty good chance. But Arena of the Planeswalkers is a tactical board game for 2 to 5 players. So find 1 to 4 friends and play this soon-ish.
August.
August. That's soon, yeah.
So in August, when you're standing in line and you're waiting for your From the Vault angels, grab one of these.
Yeah, may as well.
Start playing with the other people in line. It'll be great.
It'll run you about $30.
Yeah, it'll be about $30, and it will be, let's say, fun. I don't know anything about the gameplay. I haven't heard anything about that.
I see the word spell cards, so that helps. There's going to be cards involved.
Yeah.
Hey, this says 10 squad stat cards. Okay, well, I guess we'll figure out what that is. Hey, 20-sided die.
I mean, look, if nothing else, buy it so that you have the 5 minifigs that you can use either when you play D&D or when you're playing Warhammer.
Yeah.
Because Gideon actually kind of looks like he belongs with Warhammer.
I may pick this up so that when my kickstarted Ghostbusters gets here, I can have Liliana as one of the villains.
Oh, there you go.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm absolutely getting it for the figures just for D&D.
Yeah.
I mean, $30 is actually an impulse buy for us, and that's very unfortunate. but yeah. We are Magic players and we make bad decisions.
We are Magic players and we do, in fact, make some poor decisions.
Yeah.
So, hey, speaking of good decisions, though, do any of you out there have stock in Hasbro?
Nope. They have my money, though.
They totally have our money. Oh, God, do they have our money. The Hasbro investor call happened where they talk about all the things that happened with Hasbro, and we learn about all the things that happened with Magic as Magic props up all the things that didn't go well at Hasbro.
Yeah, we mentioned a few of these things last week or the week before recently, but now we have more.
Yeah, so we've got some slides that apparently appeared in the presentation. And the one that I find most interesting is the one that is labeled Strong Growth and has, is that Zergo Helm Smasher that we have?
I believe it is.
Zergo Helm Smasher wants you to know that Magic the Gathering had strong growth this past year.
Yeah.
With a plus 6% active player base, a plus 11% player spend. So hey,
the
economy is rebounding because we're spending more money on Magic, a plus 18% for play events. And a plus 5% on store play locations, which I can only assume means that there are more stores that are playing Magic and there are more Magic events for us to be playing.
Probably.
Yeah. So. The other thing that popped out to me was the president, John Frascati, saying that he is going to double their efforts when it comes to Moto.
We'll get to talk about that in a little bit too. So yeah, they're prioritizing Magic Online, and that will be reflected in the Magic Online news shortly.
That jumped to me. I was like, oh wow, they're going to double. Okay.
Now I am going to, however, call shenanigans maybe on one of these slides. So in the invest in Premier Play events / esports slide.
Yeah.
They tell us that, in the future, we're going to have 54 GPs. Which is going to be a 20% gain over 2014. So there are more GPs to be had.
Yes.
Okay, sure. 8,000 plus qualifying events for the Magic Pro Tour versus 800 in 2014. Now, this has got to be a reference to PPTQs.
Yes.
It has to
but
be.
I think they're double counting here because you could take down a PPTQ and you are not actually qualified for the Pro Tour yet.
No.
So
it's, however, an event that is part of qualifying. And
it is
shenanigans.
But I call shenanigans on that.
It's valid.
But the over 800,000 tournaments in play, that probably includes all of your FNMs as well, and that's still a pretty big number.
That's pretty valid.
Wow. I'm just thinking, like, if there was 8,000 qualifying events for the Pro Tour, like, I would be a career Pro Tour player. Because I believe I'm in the top 8,000.
Well, you should go to every PPTQ until you get there.
That's
all
right.
Of them.
Even the ones that are happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Double Q, buddy.
I can do that.
You got that.
Double Q. Yep. Bust out the laptop.
I'm actually wondering if these are counting Magic Online events.
I bet they are, because those are actual ways of getting there as well.
Yeah.
That could be.
And they've been doing a lot with that as well. They let so many people in without actually, that's just straight money.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Magic Online PTQs are a ridiculous money suck.
Yeah, even before the PPTQs, like, they were ridiculously, I would argue that those things were far harder to win than any PTQ that you would go to in person.
They're ridiculously hard to win, and you're straight up spending tickets. So yeah. It's not like everything else in Magic Online where you can bring your own packs. You're just giving them $30 for the privilege of doing this.
Yeah, the privilege of an O2 drop.
Yep, I paid for that before.
Yeah, we all have.
So there's your investor news until we get to talking about MTGO, which do we want to skip there now? Yeah, let's go ahead and skip straight to the – I think it's time for the MTGO report. Let's throw it over to Squee at the online desk.
Okay, so I will begin by first telling you that they did a Lore Winners for Lovers Valentine special last weekend, which – it announced on Tuesday, so we didn't get to tell you, and it's now over. So, sorry.
I was online and missed it.
Yeah, it's, I really don't like when they have, like, a Tuesday announcements. We're doing it this weekend, and then it's over kind of thing. Now, mind you, I also don't think that Lorwyn is for lovers, because I've been to that plane, and no.
It was before it went dark.
Well, okay, so before it went dark, you had a place where people were killed for not being pretty enough.
Well, yeah.
And you had a place where all the Kithkin could read each other's minds, so love meant something very different for them anyway. And you had the giants who stepped on the goblins.
which was amazing. That's lovable.
No, that's not lovable at all.
Lorwyn was not a happy place even before it was Shadowmoor, but Shadowmoor did not do it any favors. But then what plane is for lovers? None of them. They're all miserable places to be.
Innistrad, because there's vampires and stuff.
Well, Innistrad may be a lot better now.
Admittedly, yeah, it has, instead of werewolves, it has permanent furries.
Aww. Yeah. Entomorphs. All right.
But yeah, so we missed that one. I would apologize, except for the aforementioned release cycle is exactly between our episodes. So sorry you missed that. That is a reason to check Magic Online news actually on the website on Tuesdays, since anything that's very time specific, you're not going to hear from me until it's already over. Also because this goes up pretty quickly, provided Chewy is back online to upload it quickly. February 18th, which is this Wednesday's downtime, is going to take away the release events. So if you're one of those people who thinks you're going to be the lucky one in 20 or so who gets a special Ugin for being in a release event, you're running out of time. That said, moving on,
Did those even exist?
Okay, so the story behind those, just to recap it, you could not get them the normal way, and a lot of people complained on Twitter, as they do.
Yes.
And Wizards' response is that once this is over on the 18th, 1 week later when the next downtime happens, they are going to essentially take every entry that everyone had into a pre-release or a launch event and kind of run it through a random number generator or whatever. And essentially 1 in 20 of these entrances will get a special Ugin. I say 1 in 20, that's not an announced number, but that's roughly what I hear that the normal ones were, and they are matching the rate from before.
All right, so, I got real chances.
There are real chances for everyone who entered these things to have a shot at Ugin. You'll know because after the update, it will be in your collection.
Which I will never notice until like months and months later because I don't look at my promos.
The next time you go to sell cards, some bot will try to buy it off of you, and you'll be like, that feels like a bigger number than it should be.
Yeah, really.
That's how you'll notice. So yeah, that's going to be wrapping up this week. They put up a new page to address Pro Tour qualifiers in Magic Online, specifically for qualifying for Magic Origins, which is the summer event, since we don't have a Magic 2016. And this is just a giant list of when all the qualifiers are. Obviously not going to read that giant list to you, but you can pull up the calendar there for your chance to try to qualify for those. Now, keep in mind, Magic Online is doing the same thing that you do offline, where you don't just win one tournament and you're in. You take a PPTQ during the week, and then usually on Saturday or Sunday, depending on how the schedule falls, of that week, you go into another tournament that's exclusive to the people that have placed well. Like, you don't have to win, but you have to place well.
Top 8.
Is it top 8 now?
It's top 8 out of 128 players because those things always max out.
Okay. Well, yeah, the top 8s for each of the individual tournaments will be pulled into that one. You don't have to pay a special fee or anything for that one. Just consider this your delayed day 2. And then the person who wins that gets the PT invite. So It's a bit of a time commitment, both on the front end and on the back end, but it is a way to get there without having to go to a physical store. So
yeah, it is a pain in the butt, though, to like dedicate a Thursday night to PTQing and then
Trying really hard to actually get in within that very narrow window.
Right, because
like these things fill up fast. I do know that much.
Yeah, Wednesday when the downtime goes down, you got to jump in.
Yeah.
If you want to get in, or you can just sit there and watch for people to drop.
Which does happen as well.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely happens. Like, it's possible. I see it all the time. But, yeah, I've never played in one of these because I used to play in the old school PCQs, and, yeah, no.
I played in one just for the experience of trying it, and it was right after the set came out this year when they'd first announced that they were doing that new phase approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pulled up my sealed pool, and it was absolutely atrocious.
Garbage.
And it was very unfortunate because, like I said before, you can't just use your existing packs. So while I have, like, 30 packs of Cons of Tarkir sitting around from, like, draft winnings and the other events, mm-hmm. I couldn't use any of them, and I had to give them $30 more for this experience.
See, I have that complaint when it comes to the release events. Like,
same exact problem. Yeah.
I get it on the pre-release. Like, fine, take my money. But on the release events, I should be able to say, hey, I want all these packs during the pre-release. Can I just use those?
What usually happens for me is that, personally, I play really well in pre-release events. And then once people have had time to grind it out or read a bunch of articles and learn what the good cards are, mm-hmm. they just run over me because I don't have the time to devote to keeping up with it.
Yeah.
And so Yeah, the first week I load up. Like, I will come out of a given format with enough packs that I can draft the rest of the way through if I feel like it. But
yeah, I just don't think it's fair that, like, I can go on there right now and I can use my packs to get into a draft, but I can't use my packs to get into another sealed event. And I don't see why that should be that way for the release events. It should be
money.
I know that, but, like, I don't play in those events solely because of that.
It's purely WotC money. It's nice that we can actually use these packs to enter events.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that in stores generally. But on the same note, the packs have very little value otherwise, so hit or miss. But regardless, so that's the way that those work. If you've never done one before, I strongly recommend reading up on how it works before you sign in. Because it would really suck if you were to pass and do really well in your event, and then, you know, you're not free Sunday, or whenever it is that the next part happens. So just plan ahead. This will eat a lot of your time, and it could be for nothing, essentially, if you just, you know, whiff when you come back on Sunday. So have reasonable expectations. The key to all happiness in Magic the Gathering. So
Magic players do.
Totally. That said, in happier news, like I mentioned before, they're taking the bug fixing and improving Magic Online very seriously. And this Wednesday's update, tons of fixes, tons of individual card fixes. There's a giant list of them. Updates to look and feel, updates to the crashes. Like, so many scenarios don't cause crashes anymore. It's way too big of a list for me to go over, but you can scroll on it for a long time. They're putting a very concentrated effort into this update fixing a lot of the problems. So by all means, take a look at that if you're on Magic Online, or if you aren't on Magic Online, you've been considering it, but you're tired of seeing everyone all over the community just completely dogging it. They are making efforts. It's not just them taking your money and sitting back and waiting for you to give more money, which you would think it is based on some people's attitudes. But check out the giant bug list fix. Especially check it out if you are playing Magic Online and you want to know what now works. Because there are some things that you know just from playing an unfortunate trial and error don't work. And it's nice to know when they start working. So
realistically, if you play Magic Online, you should read this every week that they do an update, because known bugs, like if you decide that you're going to use these bugs, which I know some players who do, to get, you know, compensation quite often, well, known bugs, they can deny you for. So make sure you go read these.
And they will.
Yeah,
like, they will. They don't want to give the compensation when they think you already know.
Right.
So that's just how that works too. So there's a whole lot of that. And now just for some more general updates, they've shifted the way around the daily events work. Previously they had a pretty set calendar. So same time of day would get the same kind of events on given days. Now they've got it shifting a little bit. So it's roughly everything moves around an hour every few days. So you can now just keep an eye on the calendar. If you always fell on a routine before, it's probably changing. Likewise, if your free time schedule of, you know, what time you get out of work always prevented you from playing a given format, you might be able to play it now, given enough time. Also funny, they have dropped Magic Sealed for 2015, because Magic 2015 has not fired in 2 months for Sealed.
Yeah.
So, that's gone. you can still play the format, it's just not going to happen for exactly the dailies. So don't sit around in that queue aimlessly anymore. And finally, I'm just going to give you a caveat on this last news bit. So the 2015 Magic Online Championship is going to be in Seattle, which probably surprises no one, but they made an announcement out of it. It's going to be May 15 to 17, so just a few weeks before Super Modern Masters event. And of note, the link that they have here has Magic Online Championship 2014 Seattle in its title, so if they ever fix that, this link might stop working. But because the title of the page also says 2014, if they fix it just due to the way websites work, this link might break, so.
Well, it is the 2014 season.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It is the 2014 season, and the championship is happening halfway through 2015, so it could just be confusing me. But you're right, though. They probably aren't changing the link then. It's just weird. But so that'll be happening. Something to check out. And that's all that's really worth noting in Magic Online right now, right?
Yeah, I'm on there daily, and that's more than I would have said.
Yeah. This is more news than they normally give, so I felt like going into it. I won't be repeating all this stuff next week. So, fun times. Back to clues.
Sure. Okay. One last thing that I want to mention about MTGO, and it took me a while to dig this up, but back on February the 11th, they announced that Lee Sharp is now joining the digital project management team for MTGO. He's been working on MTGO and tournament work behind the scenes for a while now, but he's kind of a more forward-facing role at this point. Lee Sharp's a friend of mine. He's a cool guy. Say hi to him if you enjoy the new, let's say, daily schedules. Maybe be.
I believe he is responsible for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you like those, let him know. I at least know that at least one person there cares about MTGO. I can't say anything for the others because I don't know most of the people.
My understanding from reading what other people have posted is that a lot of them care about MTGO and that they're. Other speculation heavy factors as to the challenges, but it looks like they're overcoming them now. And based on that Hasbro Investor Day notice of them redoubling their efforts, I wager someone very high in the priority list has been told, you will fix this. So there is pressure now. Hopefully they can get Magic Online back to where people want it to be. And we can go back to hating the current client just because we hate everything.
Right. Wouldn't that be a breath of fresh air to simply hate it because we hate it?
Hey, you remember back when everyone hated the V3 client and said nothing could ever be worse? Those days.
It looks so terrible. Yes, but it was functionally it worked. But it looks horrible, okay?
We'll show you horrible.
I remember some people, be careful what you wish for. This thing works. Nobody listened.
So, we had game day happen last weekend, let's say.
It was Valentine's Day weekend.
Did you guys game day it up?
No, Valentine's Day. I have a wife and, Valentine's Day.
All right. So game day happened. That's everything I can tell you.
Congrats to the winners.
We can talk about some notes that Chewy left for us.
I suppose we can. Go ahead.
All right. So, sort of Manipool-y news over there. Mike from the Manipool apparently did poorly on Saturday. I won't really reveal his record here because I'm sure they're going to talk about it on that podcast. And that's a spoiler. And then on Sunday, I will spoil because he totally won, and that's bragworthy. So good job, Mike.
Way to go, Mike. Awesome work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's all of our Magic-related news. Do either of you have non-Magic-related news that needs talking about?
I don't know that it needs talking about. I mean,
that you want to talk about.
I don't know. Sure. So I've been playing this game recently on the phone that's like completely just driving me nuts because I'm addicted to it. It's WWE Immortals.
Okay.
It's a fighting game, but it's made by the same people who did Mortal Kombat and, and there was another fighting game back in the day that they did with superheroes that was really good. So, which I can't think of the name of at the moment. I'm sorry, but those two teams combined and they're working on this thing. And it's like, so it's far better than anything I would expect from, you know, the words WWE video games on it.
Yeah.
And it's been like driving me nuts. Cause every 2 hours I have to pick up my phone and play through my cycle so I can earn more monies. Because I don't have one of the cheaty phones. Yeah. Apparently if you have an Android, you can cheat horribly, but probably. I don't have one of those. Yeah. It's like you minimize the screen and while you're minimizing it, you tap some spot and you buy everything for free and then you resell those things. But if you have an Apple phone, you have to like do it the fair way, which just sucks up so much of your life. It's so sad. But I recommend it to anybody who likes fighting games and, you know, to kill a little bit of their time every few hours. Well worth it. Well worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. Even if you don't like wrestling, give us a shot. It's pretty good.
All right. Well, there's a plug for a new game. I guess, you know, about the only thing that I've been playing is, of course, Destiny. Because it's kind of an addiction. I will say that recently the devs from Destiny... they played through hard end of Crota's End, or hard mode of Crota's End. And, they weren't hard mode. That's right. That was the problem. Hard mode is cheap. Okay. Look, the things they did to make hard mode hard are just cheap. That's it.
I hate when that happens.
It didn't add anything to the encounter. It didn't make it more interesting in any way. They just ramped up the difficulty of all of the enemies, period. That's pretty much it. And frankly, they need to stop that. I get that they were trying to do, or at least they claim they were trying to do some interesting things with the design of Crota's End as a raid, but Vault of Glass is a much better designed raid, and they should take that as a template moving forward. It was a lot more interesting. There was a lot more teamwork involved, and look, Crota's End is just cheap. That's it, period. I've said it. It kind of sucks. I hate that I have to play Crota's End to try and get some weapons to drop. I enjoyed playing Vault of Glass even when I died. I don't enjoy playing Crota's End. And that's all I have to say about that. So Destiny people, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyone who doesn't play Destiny, you don't care. And that's fine.
So, for me, what I've been paying attention to a lot over the last week, I mentioned it earlier. There is a Kickstarter running for a Ghostbusters board game. It's officially licensed. It's being put together by Cryptozoic Entertainment, who, aside from making that game that totally isn't ripping off Magic, we promise you guys, lawsuits pending, have made a number of other games over the years. And this one's actually got me reasonably excited because, the way that they're handling it is they've got their stretch goals, and every time that people hit a stretch goal, they add more to the game. And so it is a board game where you take on the roles of the four Ghostbusters. They've got neat player cards. They gain experience points and level up and stuff like that. And the art is by the person who does some of the art for the comic books. So it's very stylized and neat looking.
Real quick, when you say the characters, are these the old characters or are these the women Ghostbusters that are coming?
No, this is the original. This is,
Peter Venkman and them. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like your team from the real Ghostbusters, to pull the name of the show, not to diminish the new ones who we haven't seen yet.
Oh, I was going to say that was sexist.
I'm referring to the TV show, not the other Ghostbusters cartoon that came out the same year, confusing all children.
Right.
But yeah, so this is the ones where you've got, you know, Egon and all of them. And it's pretty interesting because the game started out with just, you know, some basic stuff. Like you have all these little minifigures for each of the Ghostbusters and like Marshmallow Man and a bunch of ghosts. There's a lot of actual mechanics to it that I find pretty interesting. But as the Kickstarter's gone on, they've just keep throwing stuff in. So they've already unlocked like Zool and Vince Clortho, which were the two demon dogs. They've unlocked Gozer. They've added a bunch of maps so that you can now play on the top of the building from the first movie. The most recent unlocks were they unlocked a fifth playable character. Now you can play as Janine with a proton pack too, which is kind of neat. They just keep adding stuff, and as long as you've bought in on it, they just continue to give you stuff. They have a bunch of add-ons and all that stuff too, as is typical on Kickstarter, but it's so full of things that remind me of the Ghostbusters that I loved as a kid, because they're pulling stuff from the cartoons, not just the movies. So it's been pretty sweet. Like right now they're working to unlock the Halloween villain, Samhain, from the first season of the cartoon, and that's pretty sweet. And overall, this is just like a nostalgia trip for me.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed old Ghostbusters, I definitely recommend checking out the Kickstarter, if only to see the stuff that's in there. Now, the game funded in 2 days, and as of right now, there's 23 days to go, so it's all upside from here. If you don't want to get in on the Kickstarter, they'll be selling it in stores probably this fall. Like, the Kickstarter's due to ship in October. But, like, they will have it in retail stores, but the Kickstarter has all the exclusives, like getting the fifth playable character, Janine, is an exclusive to Kickstarter, and a ton of these ghosts, a ton of variants, all kinds of stuff, just to try to get people in on that early money hit. If you like Ghostbusters, check it out. If you don't like Ghostbusters, you don't care. It's right. Not a game that you want to kickstart, you know, and pay Kickstarter levels of money on when you can just buy it in the store if you don't care about all the extras.
But, so is one of the extras Slimer's a good guy?
Slimer is one of the base villains. We'll see what happens eventually.
Oh, because in the cartoon he was a good guy.
And I think we're probably going to get the friendly Slimer eventually, because they've been paying a lot of attention to feedback.
Oh, sweet.
And their comments.
Are they going to give out Ecto Slime as well? Because, you know, that was the best high C ever.
Oh, you mean Ecto Cooler?
Oh, yeah.
Ecto Cooler, I'm sorry.
I don't know that we're getting that, but I'm not going to tell you what to drink in your spare time if you want to substitute for it.
Yeah, there are recipes out there, but you know.
Yeah. But overall, it's been a lot of fun nostalgia. I'm really intrigued by the actual game mechanics because each of the Ghostbusters plays differently and has their own level up path. So it's supposed to be a game that you can do in like 30 to 40 minutes. We'll see in practice, knowing my friends and how much we table talk, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I think I'll give that a try. I do like the Ghostbusters. I do have that nostalgia because I'm in the same age group as you guys.
Yeah.
We're old.
Probably. Yeah. They most recently unlocked the taxi driver ghost. And ooh, apparently what it's going to do is probably try to hijack your Ecto-1, which it comes with a little Ecto-1 figure too.
So, that's amazing.
Like I said, I'm going to probably get the magic one and then use some of the planeswalkers to stand in for like, I'm probably just going to play the Gozer scenario and just use Liliana instead, honestly, but that's ooh,
mash
fine
up
by
the
me.
Rules and come up with your own write-up for us.
Oh, well, there's all kinds of stuff already happening. Like they're releasing PDFs of additional scenarios beyond the ones that are going to come with the game just for setting up the board different ways. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Cool. Very, very cool. All right. Well, I think we have exhausted our show notes and probably exhausted ourselves. And Steve, I'm sure we've exhausted you. Your stop's coming up, by the way. Wake up, buddy. So why don't we wrap things up? If you have any projects you want to plug or contact information you want to get out there, how about you, Angelo?
Well, as far as how to get a hold of me, that's really easy. I'm on Twitter at GANKSUOU. That's Gonksuo because everyone mispronounces that. You can also find me each and every week on the Pit Imps podcast, every few weeks on the Imps Prison. And currently right now we do have a project going on, which is a GoFundMe. We're trying to build an in-house studio so our sound quality becomes much better. To find that, you go to GoFundMe.com/JQMSNO. And I hope it's in the show notes, but, you know, Chewie's not here, so chances are it probably isn't.
You can add it to the show notes right now.
Oh, yeah. I should probably do that.
Yeah, totally put that in there.
Okay, so, yeah, it'll end up in the show notes for the show. So, yeah, please help us out as much as you can with that. The way we looked at it was from our normal base listeners, we have a lofty goal of 10 grand, but if we got $5 from every one of our listeners, we would absolutely hit our goal. And, you know, probably surpass it just by a little bit. So that was, you know, what we figured we'd go with that. But with that, we're going to do some amazing things as far as podcasting goes, but we have to actually get this studio built. So I would appreciate any help anybody could give me or, you know, what have you. If you don't like our show, don't just give me money to give me money. And if you, you know, if $5.
Give me money if you don't like his show.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't like his show, give us money.
Yeah. And realistically, if like, you know, hooking me up with $5 is like not paying your rent or, you know, keeping food from your children, please just feed your kids. That's more important. Much more important. Keep a roof over their head. But aside from that, I don't really
give
have
pit imps your kids and then you don't need to feed them.
No, I don't need any more kids. I have two. That's enough. Like I'm almost done raising them.
I'm pretty sure that that would violate GoFundMe's terms of service if it was give me your kids.
I should start a GoFundMe to see if I can get kids.
Later on the news.
We promise that we won't just teach them to play Magic and then send them home again.
Yeah. So that's how you can get a hold of me and stuff. So who's next?
All right. Well, thank you, Angelo. It was great, great having you on.
I guess if you're leading, I should go next.
How about you, Squee?
All right, so you can follow me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinNabob. The I was lost to variants, so there is no I in Goblin. And I will continue to post random nonsense there as I normally do. Beyond that, that's pretty much all I have to say, actually. Yeah, like the only thing that's really been distracting me lately has been the Kickstarter thing and trying to keep up with all of the stuff they're doing in Magic Online, which is weird because I don't actually play it very often, but I keep up with the news for here.
And
so,
we do appreciate that you take on that burden, by the way.
Yes, we do.
It's something that we need to cover, and I actually have a Magic Online account, which gives me an edge over you guys.
Sure does.
So there's that.
I will say this, as an outside voice who, when I do listen to the show, I actually look forward to that more than most other parts of the show, because I play a lot of Magic Online. It means a lot to me, and, you know, I know about the tournaments and stuff. So it's like, okay. Right. So I don't have to look all this crap up myself. Let's let him talk to me about it.
Hooray.
You know, that actually describes most of Monday Night Magic's mission. Mm-hmm. Rather than looking up all that crap yourselves, let us tell you about it.
We give you show notes, but then we talk about them so you don't have to click on them.
That's, and no one does.
Aw.
Yeah, I know. Well, we were without Chewy this week, but Chewy has been up to things as well. Again, his internet is busticated, which is why he's not with us tonight. But he does have a new random card up over on the Mana Pool, so you should go check that out. I'm not going to spoil what card it is, but if you can read the show notes, you actually already know, or if you can read the link. But anyway, go see it anyway. It's pretty good. He also has a new series that he's starting up, which is called Let the Wookiee Win, which, by the way, is an extremely clever title. And although, since he doesn't listen to the show anyway, I can say that and he'll never know. But yeah, I think that's a really clever title, where it's Chewy playing other games. This week he is playing, let's say, Hearthstone. Look, I don't really know anything about this, but
it seems likely, yeah.
It sounds like something he'd do, so I'm guessing he's going to be playing some Hearthstone. If you want to reach Chewy, you can do that a number of ways. You can, of course, email him. It's chewy@mtgcast.com, which is C-H-E-W-I-E. That's where the I from Squeak Goblin Nabob went. You can also find him pretty much everywhere. The Mana Pool, themanapool.com. I think there's a YouTube Mana Pool channel, let's say.
If you go to themanapool.com, you can probably find the rest of the links you're looking for.
Yeah, that's pretty much your best place.
Or just check every other show notes for the last 100 episodes.
That's right. As for me, well, if you want to get more of me, you can find me most weeks on the Card Advantage podcast here on the MTGCast network. You can also reach me on the Twitters. That's probably the easiest way to do it. I am at LockLuze, spelled just like it is in the show notes that you are not reading. And, of course, you can usually find me over at Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It is a great shop. You should check it out, just not tonight, because travel is impossible.
Impossible.
Do not. Impossible. You know, okay, we've made light of this, but no, seriously, stay off the roads. Okay, it's just a bad idea. I mean,
except,
you know,
you're listening to us on Thursday and everything's taken care of by now.
Well, they might have bread again, maybe.
Bread is what we use to fight the cold.
Yeah, apparently so.
And milk.
We're powered by bread. When I first moved down to the South, we were told by someone to seriously just go to the – even if you don't need any food, just go to the supermarket the night before a storm's supposed to come in just to see it.
It is, and, like Black Friday.
Sure enough, there's no bread. There's no milk. It's as if a day without bread will kill us all. So – I guess
my favorite part of it is people getting milk when they think there's going to be a storm coming in the summer, knowing full well that the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to lose the power.
Yeah, and that the milk's not going to.
It's going to spoil. But you'll be able to make sandwiches.
Yeah, you'll still be able to. And who doesn't love sandwiches?
Yeah,
they are delicious.
So there you go. Anyway, do stay safe in the weather if you're traveling. If you're listening to this while traveling, stay awake. Take a break. You know, pull off, get a cup of coffee. It'll be fine. You'll get there eventually. You don't need to rush. So that is it for us here on the, let's say, historic episode 450 of Monday Night Magic. Thank you all very much for listening, and go play some Magic.